Hey, I'm Jane Lindholm. I'm the host of Vermont Edition, and I'm just popping in to tell you that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Well, school's out for summer, but not in the way that most students, parents, and teachers expected. We got the call last week that school would be suspended for the rest of the 2019-2020 school year, but not learning. And so how are we going to manage all of this? How are we going to manage for students to learn, for teachers to teach, for parents to try to work and parent and teach and supervise all at the same time? It is an enormous challenge, and an enormous challenge for everybody, not just for parents, not just for teachers, not just for administrators. So for the next hour of Vermont Edition, we're going to talk about how to make this all work. And we'd love your help. What are you doing that works? But also, what questions do you have about the continuity of learning that is expected to be put in place? And how does that look different for the parents of a kindergartner to the parents of a junior in high school? And what are you actually doing to try to make sure that you, if you're a high school student, or that your student, if you're a parent or a teacher, is actually learning and doing what is needed to be done to stay on track for what we hope will be a successful start to the September 2020-2021 school year? We're joined now by Heather Boucher, Deputy Secretary for Vermont's Agency of Education. What a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you for being here. Heather Boucher, are you there?
Yes, I am. I apologize for that.
What is the Agency of Education's top priority now in terms of figuring out this continuity of learning plan that, in theory, we should have by, what is it, April 13th?
Yes, that's correct. So I thought I would also just start by providing a little bit of a review or a context of how we ended here, or how we got to this point. So the first gubernatorial directive closed schools and all went through April 6th. Schools were supposed to be really what we call maintaining education at that point. So they really were not supposed to be focused so much on new material, on real instruction. They were really supposed to be focused on how are we actually going to maintain our current learning. Now, and at that time, they were also instructed in the directive to be focused on developing plans for the potential for school closure after April 6th. And as we know now, the latest directive has us in that particular scenario. So yes, on April 13th, each of our supervisory districts, and also I will say our independent schools as well, there have been a lot of questions about that, must submit their continuity of learning plan to the agency. We've been providing some assistance on what that can look like, and I can talk a little bit more about that as we move forward.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's sort of different for every school and every district what's been done so far. And, you know, a lot of districts have different challenges, whether it's really making sure that all students are still being fed, or some students don't have internet access. And we hope to talk more about internet access on another show this week. But, you know, there's a lot of there are a lot of differences between school districts that are going to have to be worked out. So is that something that the Agency of Education is working on, Deputy Secretary Boucher, or is it, you know, each school district basically has to come up with a plan and the agency is going to say, you know, more or less looks good as long as students are still learning?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think it's a combination of both. Certainly would agree most of us are aware of the tremendous variability across our state in terms of regions for a variety of issues. One of them is connectivity. One of them is staffing. One of them, you know, there's just a variety of different aspects in terms of how our regions differ. So what we're doing is certainly allowing the local education agencies, or we call them LEAs, which you can think of in this context as really our supervisory districts or supervisory unions. They really are the architects of what their plan should look like. But we're keenly aware at the agency that not every district or supervisory union would have access to the same types of resources. So one of the pieces that we're actually focusing on is trying to stand up really quickly some kind of learning management system or some kind of platform where we can ensure that all teachers around the state can actually get onto this, can actually communicate with each other, and can share resources amongst themselves so that those educators that are in some areas where they might not get those opportunities naturally will have some ability to get that, like in this current extreme situation that we're in. So we are investing both in some statewide solutions that will be very helpful for some of our LEAs that don't have the resources to have perhaps invested on platforms on their own, but also will provide, they're going to be open for any district, any LEA to be able to use. They're going to be optional. They're not going to be required.
We got a note from Bridget on Facebook, and I don't know whether Bridget is speaking as a parent or an educator. Maybe both, could be either. But Bridget says, what about shortening the school year? Doing this until June is unsustainable.
Yeah, we have not made any hard decisions on the school calendar, on the timing of the school year. That is something that the secretary will be thinking about and talking with educational leaders around the state about this week. So more to come on that. I can tell you a little bit, though, about why we actually decided and Governor Scott agreed that this was the right plan for this time. Mm-hmm. For a couple of weeks, we had been kind of, as an education system, kind of hanging in limbo a little bit, if you will. As I had mentioned, it was more of a maintenance of education paradigm. So we really, you know, there are some liabilities to actually just blowing off, if you will, the last third, the last 2.5 months of the school year. We do want to make sure that we're doing our best so that students are fully prepared to move on to the next step in the fall and certainly at the end of their secondary career. So I do think that it's something that we're thinking very hard about and thinking about the practical applications of what this looks like. We know that it's really hard on families. We know that it's really hard on educators. As you had mentioned, they're often both educators and parents themselves. But we also are trying really hard to think about, you know, how do we preserve some semblance of learning that we owe to our children and our students as well.
Let's bring in another voice here. Adam Bunting is principal at Champlain Valley Union High School in Hinesburg. Adam, it's nice to talk with you again. Thanks for being on the line with us today.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here.
I'm wondering, you know, speaking of sustainability, as we're talking with the deputy secretary here, you know, how are you thinking about sustainability at CVU for students and families, but also for educators and administrators and everybody else who's usually involved in making a school year run?
Yeah, I think our call is a bigger one than just learning right now. I'm thinking a bit about the mental health of our students and the wellness of our entire community. So I'm thinking about, you know, when with the question, would we end the school year earlier? I'd almost hope not in some ways, as long as we're thoughtful about how that time looks. I think about some of my students who are trapped in homes that they don't feel good about, and their connections with their teachers are vital. I've heard from so many parents this week during the maintenance learning phase about what it was like for kids to connect to their advisors through Google Hangouts. And I had one mother wrote me a note and said, it was the first time I've seen her smile in like 3 or 4 days. So for me, it's the mental health and safety is the number one column, and then learning needs to be secondary.
Do you think that's the same for all schools? I mean, you're a high school. Is that going to be the same for a middle school? Is that going to be the same for an elementary school, Adam?
I don't even want to try to speak for the elementary school principals right now. Normally, I'm the one who's sort of envying. I'm like, oh, the biggest problem you had today was a kid stood up in class. But no, man, they're in some tough situations. So I do not even want to try to speak for how they're feeling. I imagine it's tough. I mean, a lot of our teachers are, I keep saying less is more to everybody. First of all, with online learning, it's amazing how quickly kids can be inundated with work and it's slow. It can be slow for them, and we do not want kids sitting in front of their computer screen for so many hours all day. But less is more in terms of paring down what our essential expectations are, and less is more for our teachers. They're balancing a lot right now, trying to take on online learning, which is going to be a huge benefit down the road. But they're raising their families. They've got their own anxiety to deal with. So that's kind of been my statement.
Yeah. Listeners, I'd love to know what you're thinking about as a parent. Maybe you are a high school student and this is something that's affecting you and you're trying to figure out how to make it work in your high school year. Or if you're an educator and maybe you are home with kids and trying to create lesson plans and trying to figure out how all this is going to work. And if you have something that you're looking for from the Agency of Education, give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or email vermontedition@vpr.org. We got a note from Aaron who says, I'm interested to see where mandated testing goes this year. Out the window, parental proctoring. Principal Bunting, I'll start with you, and then we'll come back to Heather Boucher.
Well, seeing what the AP exams are doing is pretty wild. For the first time, they are figuring out how to have kids take the AP exams at home. But I believe they said they're 45-minute tests, and they are going to be asking types of questions that would be difficult to Google. I don't know if that was the official title or not, but yeah, we're all in that position. One of my teachers, we had an 183 person Google Hangout this morning for our faculty meeting today, just to check in with folks, and that was a question like, when we move into this assessment period, what do we do? And quite frankly, I think we need to err on the side of trust with our kids. And I don't necessarily want to be putting parents in the position of proctoring. I think that's a pretty unfair thing for a lot of our parents who are really hard at work also. So, and we need to give the types of assessments that don't require just rote memorization for answers.
So what about the testing that's mandated throughout different grades, not necessarily AP testing, but, you know, Deputy Secretary Boucher, what is the plan for that?
Sure. So we were very quick as a state in Vermont to obtain a waiver. The minute the U.S. Department of Education said that they would entertain waivers for what are called our accountability metrics. And that's what we think of. That's what we think of when we think of standardized tests like our SBAC, Next Generation Science Standards exams, our fitness gram exams for physical education. So all of those are waived this year. And we don't have to worry about them. It would have been really unfair to really test students in the current climate, of course, and it would have been, as Adam is saying, pretty impossible to actually implement those. I would say as well that we know College Board, so SAT and I believe also ACT tests have been pushed back into late spring. So those are some other standardized tests for students who are thinking about eventually moving on to post-secondary opportunities. Those testing companies are also pushing back, and they're very mindful of you know, how they can be flexible for students as well.
Yeah. Adam Bunting, are you finding that for, you know, in terms of working with colleges to address college admissions for this year for students who are planning to go to college? A lot of the admissions are contingent upon a successful completion of senior year, for example, and that's going to be difficult to assess.
Yeah, I think the college has been great so far. Everyone we've talked to has understood that the transcripts are going to need to look different. I think second semester courses are going to look like things like incomplete COVID or pass or pass with distinction. So transcripts will look different, but they're going to look different at colleges as well. I think we're all in the same boat.
Mm-hmm. Adam Bunting, how are you supporting teachers, most of whom have never had to try to do this, many of whom, as we've talked about, are home with their own kids and other things that might be stressful at this time and are probably worried about what their jobs are going to look like in the future? And, you know, some of whom are saying, I'm doing a lab biology course right now. How do you want me to translate that to distance learning? Or, you know, we're doing paper mache in third grade. How the heck are we going to do this with the third grade students from afar whose parents are working? How are you supporting your staff?
Ooh, man, that's a big question. One of the most important things that we're doing, and I got this from David Melnick, who's at NFI. I would highly recommend having him on the program if you get a chance. He sent out a nice statement over the weekend that was talking about, yes, anxiety is contagious, but so is calm and so is goodwill. And what we've really been trying to do is keep the information, give people as much clear information as they can, trying to maintain my own positive sense of humor when I'm connecting with people, but also just remembering this idea of purpose, right? I think humans function at our best when we have our purpose at our fingertips. And if this doesn't put us in a position where we can get clear about what's most essential, what's important in life, also give us a chance to take risks, to try out some, what's that lesson plan you've always wanted to do that, yeah, maybe you can't do it face to face, but we can, as long as we're hitting our essential skills and learning targets, we can vary the way in which we're approaching things. How do we turn this into an exciting opportunity for our kids so that when our kids at some point are looking back in this period, they're bummed out. Yeah, they're bummed out that prom's not there. They're bummed out, who knows, like they had a virtual graduation maybe even, but they have this sense of what the values were from the adults. That, I think, is the most important thing.
What do you need from the Agency of Education?
I think they've been doing a great job. I think the move from maintenance learning to remote learning was well-timed. I think it was a good direction to go in. I think listening to the superintendents is really important. And the more that they can minimize the kind of changing information would be helpful. I was a little, and I don't know if this is on the agency of ed, I was a little bit taken aback on Thursday when the governor did the announcement, just because I'm a big fan of Governor Scott, but I had no heads up. Basically, my daughter walked into my room crying and said, "Hey, is school canceled for the year?" I'm like, "What are you talking about? I haven't seen anything." So I need lead time on that as a principal so I can get a message out to our community and our communities at large, just because there are some kids in vulnerable positions who learn that information and need that support. So just the earlier I can get communication, the better.
Well, thank you for that. Adam Bunting is principal at Champlain Valley Union High School in Hinesburg. Best of luck as you figure this out along with the rest of us, Adam.
Thanks so much. And by the way, when I grow up, I want to be like Dr. Levine. She's amazing.
We're talking with Heather Boucher, Deputy Secretary for Vermont's Agency of Education. And let's go to Bill, who's calling in from Williston. Hi, Bill. Go right ahead.
Hey there. Thanks for taking my call. Listen, I was on a school board for a long time, and we used to talk about distance learning and technology and leveraging that. And frankly, we spent a lot of money and saw a lot of inertia. I am hopeful that out of this, we can see some distance learning continue. For example, maybe a calculus 2 class shared by 3 high schools. So we try to take something good from the bad, but I'm excited in a way in this tragedy to see us kind of being pushed down this road.
Bill,
that's my comment.
Yeah, thanks for your comment. I appreciate that. And, you know, Deputy Secretary Boucher, it's certainly too soon to know what all the outcomes, bad or good, are going to be from all of this. But are you starting to even see, or, you know, see the possibility of changes that can be made in the educational system that will be positive moving forward from this?
Sure. I think we have built a lot of infrastructure as a state, particularly for the high school, middle school and high school grades, around what we call flexible pathways, where a lot of the distance learning and some of our more applied or community-based experiences tend to occur. So, you know, I always think it's important that if we can think of potential opportunities, sort of silver linings in the cloud, it's hopeful. And we certainly could see, as your caller discussed, that hopefully investing in areas where they're not already doing this kind of distance learning could really be something that would be useful for future generations of students. We do plan to, we have, if in case callers don't know, a pretty robust online learning platform that's state supported in Vermont, which is the Vermont Virtual Learning Collaborative. And it's primarily for, again, our secondary students, primarily high school students. But our licensed teachers teach in that program. It's a well-run program. It has a lot of offerings. Last year, there was actually a biology course where students actually were doing remote learning about, I think, diving in the Maldives or something like that, and video conferencing about that, which is, it's pretty amazing. So I do think that there's some potential really good stuff that could come out of this. But I do want to echo what Adam Bunting said, that for our younger grades, we really do need to be thinking a little bit creatively and outside the box, because What we're asking is a little bit more than just playing on an app or doing a particular assignment or two. The other thing I would say as well is that when we talk about remote learning at the agency, we're not just talking about digital learning. There are many communities in our state, across our state, where they might not have access to in terms of bandwidth, in terms of interconnectivity. So especially in the younger grades, really what educators are going to be faced with is kind of blending what we would call analog, paper and pencil, packets, those kinds of things, with digital techniques. And that's another area where local education agencies, as your caller had said, he was a school board member, have differed in terms of the extent to which they've historically invested in those types of infrastructural programs or platforms or even a knowledge base for those.
We got a note from Lyle who says, as an educator, I strongly urge the state to cut the year at the end of April, develop a robust summer education program, and begin school in early August. Vermont can get at least 190 days of student learning by then cutting vacation days and limiting teacher in-service. And Lyle suggests the first 6 weeks of school would be at previous grades to assess learning and needs. Is that kind of flexible approach something that you're even considering at the agency?
Well, I think all possibilities are on the table at the moment. So we have not made any decisions from a state perspective on that. The calendar as it stands right now, I believe, is actually set locally. So there is no grand state calendar. So we're not even sure with current statute that the Secretary of Education could actually make a declaration like that. But it's certainly something that we're thinking of.
Could the secretary or could the state shorten the number of required days?
Right now, the State Board of Education, it's a great question, thank you. Right now, the State Board of Education has provided the secretary with the authority to entertain waivers on the number of days of instruction.
Okay, so that's in flux at the moment.
Well, right. So right now, a particular LEA could petition the agency to say, here's a reason why I'm not going to make the 175 minimum days, which is a different approach or a different kind of question than what your caller or your person who submitted the question said, which is like a more of a blanket approach for the whole state, which would probably be, I mean, that would be cleaner, easier. We're just wondering and thinking about that. And we'll very soon make some decision about that because we know it's clearly on the minds of a lot of folks.
Right. And even offering guidance, I suppose, would help figure out, helps school districts and supervisory unions figure out what they might do.
Could I just add a little bit to this as well? So I want to make sure that folks, both parents, but also educators and administrators, aren't thinking that the way to do remote learning is to just take everything that would have been done in this next 8 to 10 weeks and just squish it into a remote delivery system. That will not work. So what really needs to happen is Adam was talking about this a bit. So you really need to be thinking about like, what are the critical elements that we need to make sure our students have before they start the next year? You're not going to at all be able to do every single thing that you're going to do when school was still open. So, I think I'm saying that because I want that to also be sort of, we're all in this together and we need to have reasonable expectations of each other. And I know educators work so hard, and I know some of them have already been trying to kind of replicate every single thing they're doing in this new remote sort of sphere. And it's just not something we're going to be able to do. So I just want to actually make that pretty clear that we need to really prioritize the real critical, really important things that our students need to actually learn. And a lot of that has to do with social emotional learning. It's not just academic performance, as we've talked about.
Yeah, I imagine a lot of schools and teachers are thinking about that. But to hear it come from the Agency of Education is an important message to continue reiterating, just this idea that things are different. It can't be the same. And, we heard Anna Bunting saying, oh, boy, normally I sort of maybe Josh with the teachers of elementary school students, but right now they're in a really difficult and different spot. So let's bring in a teacher of younger students. Susanna Paugh teaches art to students at the K-5 Newbrook Elementary School in Newfane. I understand she also redesigned the school's website to become a distance learning portal when it was announced that schools would close. Susanna, it's nice to have you with us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So do you see a difference, you know, in this question of how a first, second, or fourth grader might be trying to learn in a totally different way? You know, we heard the sort of high school perspective. What about from yours?
Yeah, so it's really different, and teachers are still grappling with how that looks. Do I send a video every morning? Do I have a schedule for the whole week? Do we have Google Meetups every morning or not? And each of our teachers is kind of figuring that out on their own, and we're trying to make it work, but we're also still really trying to plan it and grow slowly so as not to overwhelm our families. So what's working is teachers are sort of modifying it to their teaching style, and that's what's working so far.
What's working for you? How are you teaching art?
So it's hard to teach art distance-wise, and especially because I don't know what materials kids have. I can assume most kids have some paper, some scrap paper, some crayons, maybe some markers. But so I have to really distill my lessons to the materials they may have. You know, last week we made a scavenger hunt where they found objects from the recycling bin and found attachment things. And then they put that all together to create a sculpture. And then some of the families sent me photographs and I create like a little online gallery. So we're starting really slow with that too, because I know that there's this essential learning that needs to happen. And if they don't visit my art page and do an art project made by me, that's probably okay for this week, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's neat. And thinking about, you know, how students can sort of design their own things with the materials they might have at home, probably also helpful to parents and caregivers in that kind of environment as well. But what about what Deputy Secretary Boucher just said, Suzanne, about this idea that, you know, we're not going to be able to do things exactly the same. And so a lot of it is this social emotional learning and right. What students actually need to be able to do to sort of move forward emotionally, but also to the next grade. When you think about your curriculum and the goals beyond what's the actual physical product that a kid is making, how are you trying to shape, you know, what you think your students need and need emotionally and sort of be able to express that in their artwork?
Right. So, I mean, we know that art it reflects life. So right now, I think mostly I want my kids to be making art to help them have a break from what's going on. Maybe they're drawing about it. Maybe they're sculpting, maybe they're painting. But I'm not necessarily going to teach them how to properly shade right now. That's not what they need. They need that outlet. They might do reading for a little bit, and then they might do an art project, and then they might do math after that. So I do really think that my goal for the rest of this year is to art to be an outlet for a place for them to do something different, to express themselves, or to feel a little bit better, and maybe alleviate some anxieties that they may have.
What are you worried about? Are you worried about your job? Are you worried about your students? Are you worried about your own life?
Oh my goodness, that's a huge question. So the worry kind of cycles. It changes throughout the day. I worry about I have two little girls here at home that I'm homeschooling. And while they're doing great and they're staying on a nice schedule and they're having a lot of freedom to explore things that they love, I worry about what it's going to be like for them to not finish first grade and not finish third grade. And as a teacher, I guess I worry about what next year looks like. How do we come back from all of this? And are we growing or are we going backwards? And what has this taught us? And is there going to be continued anxiety about our public health next year into the school year?
How are you going to get answers to those concerns?
I think you just said
asking for a friend.
I've been taking lots of long walks and that's helped. But yeah, I think we take one step forward. You would do the right thing that works for the day and then see what the next day brings. That's the best we can do right now.
Well, good luck to you and to your kids at home and to all the kids that you're teaching art to. I appreciate your time.
Yep.
Suzanne Paugh teaches art to students at the K-5 Newbrook Elementary School in Newfane. You know, Heather Boucher, it is those questions are cropping up for everybody in whatever position they're in the schools and in administration and teaching or as parents and as students. And that idea of what is this going to mean and what is this going to look like? I keep thinking that, you know, for my kids, if they remember it, they're pretty young, this will be a defining time in their life, that year that school ended before it was supposed to. I mean, you must be thinking about that too.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a 15-year-old who's a freshman in high school, and we've been talking about about this quite a bit. And so, you know, just to echo kind of what you were saying, when she and I were chatting, I was talking about, you know, for some younger students, really young kindergarten, will probably hazily recall this as this really weird and interesting thing that happened. But, you know, on our minds are our graduating seniors, for instance, who, you know, we really need to figure out how to make this a viable transition for them. And we're going to be doing some work for on that in the next coming weeks as well at the agency. But, you know, just all of those social aspects of school as the teacher actually, as your guest actually discussed, have been really all of a sudden just kind of boom, they're gone. And I think that's been really tough for students across all grades. And I will say for educators as well, who have, you know, they kind of woke up and then they weren't going to see their students again for the rest of the year. And so it harkens back to the point I was saying earlier, which is like, we just really have to be understanding of each other and compassionate and understand that we're all in this together. It's a crisis, you know, for our humanity right now. And the other thing that I think about is that Vermont is not the only state going through this. And, there's, some interesting solidarity in that, you know, this really is a global pandemic. But I don't have some of those broader answers. I think we'll all have to figure those out as we move forward. I do know that educators are some of the most resilient individuals I've ever met in my career. And I have absolute faith that we'll do fine. And we will do what we need to help students feel safe again and to move forward.
Deputy Secretary Boucher, we got a question from Krista who says, what about the schools that don't currently have budgets? Are there any adjustments being made?
I would need a little bit more information, as in they don't have.
Well, my assumption budgets from the question was, you know, some districts,
they don't have enough. Yeah.
Yeah. That have struggled, that don't pass a budget, for example, on town meeting day. And so they may still be in the process of figuring out what their next budget is. You know, that was where I was going. But because, yeah, most schools should have a budget currently for the current school year, I would imagine.
Right. That's kind of why I hesitated a little bit. So one of the things we do know, we're actually suggesting that folks do, is actually just keep track of everything that you're spending funds on. So if something is a new practice, a new type of material, a new type of equipment that you have to invest in, just keep receipts, keep track of that. Because as your viewers might have heard, there will be some federal dollars actually coming down that will offset some of these funds, some of these spending deficits if they arise. It's interesting because from a state perspective, we've kind of promised everything a steady state right now. So everyone is paid, everyone, you know, right now, everything sort of stays the same until the pandemic is over. I mean, that's really what we've said. So I think that is that we don't want educators or even LEA leaders to be worrying so much right now about how things are going to get paid for. I know that's an easy thing to ask, and it's not an easy thing to actually implement when you're actually in the field.
Well, but it might also not be easy for taxpayers who say, well, wait a minute, you know, school budgets come on the backs of people who own property in the town. So is the state saying we will, you know, back fund anything that has not been approved in the budget by townspeople?
Well, I'm not sure that that's what I was saying, but I am saying that anything for this current budget we've gotten taken care of. And as I said, we do anticipate, we have already been assured from our congressional delegation and some of the other media reports that there will be federal dollars that will actually be coming down. Some of those will be apportioned to our school systems. So right now, the US DOE is talking about actually using some of our existing streams, like our title dollars, using that as a mechanism to get additional funding to schools, but opening up the flexibility of what those dollars could be used for. So not restricting them like our current title dollars are restricted.
What are you telling schools about layoffs and staffing? You said it's all steady state now, but you know, for how long and what should people expect?
Yeah, I think we're just starting to think about those questions right now. I know that we have been getting a couple of questions on that. So that is something that we'll be quickly turning to think about and figure out sort of how as a state we want to approach that. Contracts for staffing are still set at that local level, but it will behoove all of us if we can have some shared principles, some shared guidance about how we're actually making those decisions, how we're moving forward. And I do believe that will be coming in the next week or so.
Let's talk to another educator. Kathy Smith teaches sixth grade science at Canaan Memorial School, and she's on with us now. Hi, Kathy. Nice to talk with you.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
How are you? Go ahead.
I actually teach sixth grade everything and fifth grade science.
Oh, my goodness. So how are you teaching fifth grade and sixth grade science, and how are you teaching sixth grade everything right now?
It's a challenge. It's definitely a learning curve. I'm awful glad to have Google Classroom and all of the Google Meet and Google Hangout stuff that we'll be implementing and are implementing with my kids. Some of them are Facebook savvy. We've been Facebook messaging often, sending emails every day, trying to keep a pulse on how they're doing emotionally and socially, as well as their academics.
So even in your classes, you know, let's say fifth grade science, you're really still homing in on those questions of just how are you doing?
Absolutely. That to me is the critical thing for me to know about my kids is how they're doing emotionally.
How is the technology working for you? Is this a stumbling block for families, for teachers, for anybody, or is it fairly smooth?
Technology has been, internet connectivity is a real problem for a fair number of people up here. We don't have internet for some of our families, and so the whole idea of equity for all is we know it's critically important, but to try and make that happen, we have to be incredibly creative to support kids who don't have that internet capability at their houses.
Yeah, how are you doing that?
Well, some teachers are sending packets home. You know, I'm not part of that, you know, because I've got the capability at my house, even though it's slower at times, but younger kids, it's harder for them. We have computers for our kids grades 4 through 12, so we're fortunate in that regard. But the primary teachers are having to be more creative by sending packets either through the mail or with the daily breakfast and lunch program that we're sending home to our kids as well.
And what about the rest of what we've been talking about today, these questions that swirl for so many people about, you know, what are the expectations? What are students needing to learn? How are they going to learn? You know, what are you still wondering about as we move into this next phase?
Well, trying to figure out the most important stuff for my kids to know as they move on to seventh grade, utilizing the standards as what are the most important standards that I want them to learn. For reading and math is where I'm really focusing on, and the writing, doing some overall projects. So we're tying in art and other creative avenues, as well as writing and reading and researching and other things like that. Trying to do more projects instead of individual lessons on specific subjects.
That's Kathy Smith. Kathy teaches fifth grade science and sixth grade everything, which I can just totally imagine, at Canaan Memorial School. Kathy, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks so much for having me. Have a good day.
You too. Heather Boucher, another topic that we could do a whole show on, and I hope we will at some point, but just want to address for people who are wondering and perhaps worried, what is the plan for students with special needs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's a really important issue, and one that we're taking very much seriously. We do have some guidance to help us, again, from the federal U.S. Department of Education. New guidance is coming out every day. We're always hopeful that it's going to be even more specific. What we do know, the latest what we do know is that we can actually individualized education plans are sort of the agreement that the schools have with the student and the family in terms of the accommodations that are required for a particular student to access their education, so that they get their FAPE, which is free. I'm blanking on
I know. I wish I could help you. I wish I knew what it was.
No, it is. It's free and accessible public education. I actually was already saying the words. I apologize. And so the good news is that at one point we thought, oh my gosh, does this mean all of the IEPs for all of our students in our state need to be redone? The answer is no, that because in the old sort of, you know, the existing rules, that's how they were written. So what has happened recently, though, is that the US DOE has said, no, you can do addenda to students' IEPs, which is actually helpful because then you can actually really focus and home in on, like, what are the new accommodations? What are the new types of supports that students need based on this new situation? So it's really critical, though, because now that we are moving into a continuity of learning phase where we are expecting students to continue to have some learning going on, have some instruction going on, that we do have an obligation to actually provide FAPE for our students. And it will mean that we're being very creative, working very closely with parents and students themselves. And we will, as I said, we're just starting to get some of that guidance from the federal Department of Education. So this will be an ongoing set of supports and technical assistance and guidance that we're going to keep providing to the field. So I guess I would say stay tuned. There are, stay tuned, but I think we do have some sense of, I can't express how that was actually a really big piece to actually understand about the IEPs, that we can actually make additions to the IEP. For good reasons, a lot of the federal law on special education is really quite strict mm-hmm. because it is an important issue that we really all need to take very seriously. So it might sound like a small thing to mm-hmm. your viewers, but it is actually a very big thing because it does allow for the flexibility that our educators on the ground in the field need to actually do their work. Another example is that was part of this guidance from the Federal Education Department. There used to be required face-to-face meetings around student IEPs, and they're now saying, no, you can have those by phone. You can actually have those virtually. So, but until the federal government actually says it's okay to do that, we're out of compliance, mm-hmm. So I know these sound like very sort of bureaucratic things, but they're really critical.
Let me ask you just quickly, we only have about 30 seconds, but I just want to check for, you know, the families of essential personnel who are sending their children to be cared for during the day. Are those children going to be getting instruction in all of the things that we've just been talking about today?
Well, their schools are responsible for ensuring that they get their educational needs met just as the other students are. So parents will need to be in contact with the schools and explain their situation. So yes, their districts are obligated to provide them their education as well, just as other students.
Well, I'm sure there will be more questions as this rolls on, but Heather Boucher, thank you very much for talking with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Heather Boucher is Deputy Secretary of Vermont's Agency of Education.